Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the one and only Savage Nation. Join the fun by calling 1-800-449-8255, any topic we can review. Rock and Roll Friday. Little Frankie Lyman to get the lines juiced up. You know, I have a health story for you to start with. Forget political for a minute. Turn it off already. Thanks, Frankie. Give him a hot shot and we'll see him in hell. 1-800... Sorry, that was a throwaway line. Just came off the tip of my lips. I have a health story for you today on this. You know, everything comes around and you find out that your instincts were right about food. I'm not saying go back to meat and potatoes, but it's not such a bad idea. Let me explain what I mean. Many of us grew up and we watched our parents get sick fairly young and didn't enjoy good health. And at 50, they looked 70, 75, and many of them died. And we went on to healthier lifestyles, lower fats, less meat, tons of, vitamins, exercise, no cigarettes. And I think we've enjoyed better health as a result. However, being an expert in the field, along the way, I've always been sort of a dissident with regard to some of the ideas that came along. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's say you suffer from or you know someone who has something called ulcerative colitis. Have you ever heard of that disease? Unfortunately, it's fairly common out there. Ulcerative colitis, what is it? It's a lifelong disease characterized by inflammation of the lining of the large intestine. People suffer from it. I'm going to make this brief. I don't want to do health questions today. I'm going to do politics and whatever, okay? But this is very important. So you see, ulcerative colitis. Now, many of us are sold on omega-3 fatty acids, and then many of us think that linoleic acid is good for us, meaning flaxseed oil. Many of you heard, oh, use flaxseed oil, and many of us take tons of flaxseed oil, right? What you don't know is that a major study has just been published in Europe, which shows that some kinds of polyunsaturated fatty acids, actually raise colon ulcer risk. And that includes foods rich in linoleic acid. They're not good for you, particularly if you're suffering ulcerative colitis. So I don't care what your massage therapist told you. I don't care what your astrologer told you. Listen to a PhD in epidemiology and nutrition who has studied this for 35 years. A new study, which is a legitimate study, which analyzed 203,000 men and women ages 30 to 74. That's a big study. This is not eight people in a chiropractor's office. They discovered that people who consumed foods that are particularly rich in this type of polyunsaturated fatty acid, linoleic, and that would include, I'm going to read you the list, have a higher risk of developing ulcerative colitis against those who consume the least. Now, on the other side, those who ate fish and fish oils had a lower risk of the disease. So that's something that you should know, both positive and negative. So now, to summarize this, I want to read to you a list, a short list, of foods rich in linoleic acid. You ready for this? Canola oil. I don't think you're going to believe what I'm telling you. Soybeans. Walnuts, flaxseed, linseed oil, and marijuana. That's right. You potheads are actually probably inducing many diseases, not the least of which is a lifelong disease called liberalism. But excessive marijuana will also load your body up with linoleic acid, and you have to understand what I'm talking about. Now, I'm talking about linoleic acid, not linolenic acid. So now we're going to look up linoleic acid. Godric, get me the correct one now, linoleic acid, because this is something a little different. Linoleic acid, 1-800-449-8255. Now let's talk about the troop surge. It's interesting that the liberal bloggers are saying one thing, and the knee-jerk Republicans are saying another, and nobody is quoting Michael Savage. Now, where would you categorize me? I'm known as a right-winger, right? And yet the blogs are saying liberal base is angry at Obama for the troop surge, and right-wingers are happy. Well, what does that make me, since I was against it? So that means I'm not a liberal, nor I'm not a right-winger. What am I? Karl Rove, it's easy for him to be a warmonger. He was a warmonger under Bush. So naturally, he would be a knee-jerk Republican on this and say, troop surge, good. The other establishment right-wingers, they disgust me. They get me sick because none of them are putting their bodies at risk. And that's what bothers me the most. If Sean Hannity were to put on a uniform and go out and fight, I would say that I believe a word he says. If Rush Limbaugh were to put on a uniform, if they could find one to fit, and would go and say, I'm going to lead a brigade, or I'm going to lead a unit, or I'm going to lead a platoon. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to show that I'm going to put my body where my mouth is. Then I believe a word he says. If Karl Rove would go over there and fight, I believe a word he said. If Newt Gingrich, that fat blimp, would put on a uniform and go over there, I believe a word he said. But none of them have anything at stake. That's why I'm not so happy with this. If I thought that it really was going to limit terrorism around the world, I would say, okay, well, maybe there's a justification for it. But I believe that counterinsurgency tactics are one thing, counterterrorism tactics are another. There is a difference between counterinsurgency and counterterrorism. Counterinsurgency means killing Taliban and Al-Qaeda. But does that mean you're going to counterterrorism? Some would argue that counterinsurgency might encourage terrorism rather than decrease terrorism. Now, as far as the argument goes, that if we don't kill them over there, they will come to Afghanistan as a safe haven from everywhere. The argument could be made that that's not such a bad idea. Because if the terrorists were to come back from Africa, come back from Yugoslavia, from wherever they may be, Brooklyn, Dearborn, San Francisco, and flow into their new safe haven of Afghanistan, why then at least we would know where they are amassing, where they are congregating. And then we would have hard targets for our Air Force and our cruise missiles. So this is much more complicated than are you for the war or against the war. I don't see any strategy here. I don't see any intelligence here. And we could talk about that. Here's an email from a caller that I'd like to read to you. Michael asked the question, quote, is there a congressman or a senator who has a son or daughter in the war? My caller friend Emil in the Bay Area said a Senator James Webb from Virginia has a son in the real Marine Corps, not the Reserves or National Guard, who was deployed as a real trigger puller, Senator James Webb. If I'm not mistaken, Congressman from L.A. also, didn't he have someone down there? Huh? 1-800-44, huh? Yes, is Duncan Hunter's son still over there? Oh, he's in Congress. Good for him. I'm glad he won. All right, we'll straighten out the linoleic acid story the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I wonder who wrote the book of life.
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, a national tradition as American as Teddy the Poodle.
I love you, darling.
I'm in Berlin. Berlin, come in. See, this is really a secret message to anti-terrorist fighters around the world. When I play rock and roll, we're really sending messages out to our brave men in the field. Because this was not translated into any foreign language yet, so far as I know. Turn it off. Come on. Let me finish up the linoleic acid thing for you, just so you don't get confused. Let me start again. If you have ulcerative colitis or someone in your family has painful inflammatory bowel disease known as ulcerative colitis, understand a major study came out which shows that a certain kind of polyunsaturated fatty acid and heavy margarines, not butter, may be increasing their risk of this disease. Foods or oils high in linoleic acid, okay, high in, that doesn't mean eliminate them all, and it doesn't mean if you don't have the disease you should even think about it. But let's say you do. Your doctor doesn't know any of this. He puts you on medicine. That's the, all he knows is drug, you know, burn a poison, a disease. They know nothing about preventing disease, and they know little about treating disease with foods. I've studied it for 30 years. Does it make me a world's expert? No, but I know something about it. I can read the literature. So if you have an inflammation of the lining of the large intestine, or your daughter does, unfortunately a lot of women do, it's known as an autoimmune disease, look into what kind of food consumption you are engaging in, or your daughter. Linoleic acid may inflame this disorder. And here are the foods or the dietary sources of linoleic acid that you really want to limit if you have this disorder. The highest on the list is safflower oil at 78%. Safflower oil, in other words, which we've been brainwashed into using, may be fine for people who don't have ulcerative colitis, but it should be eliminated, in my opinion, if you do. 78%, grapeseed oil, 73%, poppy seed oil, 70%, sunflower oil, 68%, hemp oil, 60%, corn oil, 59%, wheat germ oil, 55%, cottonseed oil, 54%, soybean oil, 51%, walnut oil, 51%. Now, let's cut it off there. Peanut oil is 48% linoleic. These are lower. Sesame oil, 45%. Now you go down the list. Canola oil is 21%. It's not that high. Linseed oil is 15%. Lard. Now already you're dealing with food components that have almost none. And those would consist of lard, 10%. Olive oil, 10%. Palm oil, 10%. Cocoa butter, 3%. Butter, 2%. And coconut oil, 2%. It's interesting. My mother, God rest her soul, lived to 88. Knew nothing about nutrition, so I thought. She said, I don't know, I like butter. I'd argue with her. No, Ma, butter causes heart disease. Well, it is true that butter, for certain people, is to be avoided. We're talking about ulcerative colitis here. So you see, this is the problem. When you start looking at one disease instead of the other, and you forget there's a whole panoply of things you have to worry about all at once, it can drive you crazy, and many people just give up and say, the hell with it, I'll eat what I want. That's not the right answer. The right answer is a moderate amount of some of these foods. And if you have illnesses like ulcerative colitis, you eliminate the high in linoleic acid foods. So to review, I'll put it up on michaelsavage.com. It's new information from a new study. And I like to give you this information as I get it here on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Fatty acids raise colon ulcer risk. Did I come up with the study? No. Is it published in the Journal of Palynology from Alaska State Prison? No. It was not published in the Alaska State Prison by S. Palin, editor. This was published in a journal called Gut. I know it sounds funny to you, but Gut is actually a legitimate peer-reviewed scientific journal. Unlike climate science, when it comes to gut science, I think that there's less corruption. Although I could be wrong about that as well. Who knows? Whether there's kind of politics in the gut world today. My gut tells me that gut is a reliable source. Hey, God, what is so funny about this? So, in other words, that's the story. What should you eat? Well, what should you eat? Fish, take omega-3 fatty acids, eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, eat a lot of fish, eat nut oils. And that's the story. And avoid the diets that are rich in linoleic acid. Try to get foods low in linoleic acid along the lines of what I just said, and see what happens. And that's the story. But you don't want to talk about this. I got calls now only about the war. I don't blame you. I have a question for you. I'm leaving early tonight by 1 hour, and my good friend will fill in for the last hour because I have to go to dinner with a prominent politician who will probably be one of the prominent candidates for the presidency on the Republican side in 2010. 10. He or she is instantly recognizable on the national scene. I will not divulge the name of the person now or in the future until it is appropriate to do so, if it will ever be. So I'm going to dinner right after the show, and I want to know what you think you would ask this person if you were at this dinner. If I invited you, what would you either ask this candidate for the presidency, or what would you advise this candidate for the presidency? What is the most important issue that they should address during the campaign? Is it the war? Is it illegal immigration? Is it taxation? What is it? What's the one thing that this candidate for president needs to hear from you, the American people? And if you were me, what would you ask them? Again, I'll say it again in case you missed it. You have to repeat yourself three times. I'll be leaving 1 hour early this evening on the Savage Nation. I'm having a brief dinner with a prominent Republican who will probably be in the absolute, believe me, candidate for president in 2012. He or she is instantly recognizable on the national scene. Now, although the conversation I will have this evening is off the record and I will not disclose it on this show, I want to know what you think I should ask this individual. What is the one thing that this individual needs to hear from you, the American people? By dint of the fact that this individual is meeting me for dinner, there's been a sea shift in American politics. Remember, I am an outsider. I am an independent. I am not on Fox News. God bless their souls. I'm not a Republican, nor am I a Democrat. I'm an independent. And I represent 10 million listeners, not all of whom certainly would vote the way I would vote. I wouldn't expect you to. But I would suspect that a good number of you probably agree with me politically. I would ask you, what is the number one thing you would say to this individual if you were lucky enough to be at that table with me and this individual? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. It's as real as linoleic acid, what I just told you. Here's your opportunity to influence an individual who, in my opinion, has a good chance and should be the person to replace Obama.
Savage.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking. Whole lot of shaking going on. Well, I say, come on over, baby.
Welcome back to the True Voice of America, the Savage Nation. Rock and Roll Friday, every Friday, right here on your local station. And that's it. We're talking about the war. We're talking about war and peace. If you can have any peace in this world today, it's hard to have any peace. There are so many elements working against us having a peaceful moment, let alone a peaceful day, let alone a peaceful holiday, let alone a peaceful Christmas. But you have to do the best you can. You got a ClimateGate scandal. And you've got these con men in the Democrat Party saying that the leaked files of scientific misconduct should not stand in the way of Congress swiftly enacting cap-and-trade legislation. That's Congressman Ed Mularkey. Representative Ed Mularkey says it doesn't matter what the science says because we want to push cap-and-trade down the throats of the world. It's a con! It's money, honey! Two Academy Award members want Gore's Oscar rescinded. Speaking of Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone crime family, in my opinion, Al Gorleone has canceled his appearance at the Copenhagen Conference on the Environment. That's right. Every time this man has any fear he may be challenged, he runs like from a fire. His latest news, 76 people were killed tonight in a Russian nightclub explosion. The Itar-Tass news agency cited an unnamed police source as saying there were about 200 people in a nightclub in Moscow. 76 killed, another 60 injured. We'll have updates for you as we go along. Apparently, the Islamo-fascists are alive and well, and they don't like Russians. At least 100 reportedly killed in a Russian nightclub explosion. Pardon me, it was not in Moscow. It was in a city of Russia known as Perm, P-E-R-M. Most of the dead were employees and their relatives who were celebrating the club's anniversary. Perm is about 700 miles east of Moscow. 700 miles east of Moscow. So if you are from Russia and you have relatives in the area, I send my sympathies in advance. I have no further information. Again, back to the main topic on the Savage Nation. I'm leaving the show 1 hour early this evening because I'm going to dinner with a prominent Republican who will probably run for the presidency in 2012. He or she is instantly recognizable on the national scene. I would like to know what you think I should ask this person, not what you think I should ask, but really, what is the most important issue to you? Because I'm going to be basically your emissary. I am a minister without portfolio. I have described to you for years on this show that talk radio hosts with national audience are, in essence, ministers without portfolio. We're not members of any party. We have no official standing. Therefore, we have less in the game, and we have absolutely no special interest. My special interest is the American people. In that regard, yeah, I have a real special interest, the most special interest there is, you. I don't represent anybody but you. Now, I know what I'm going to say. What would you say? Kansas City, Chris, go ahead, please. What's the most important thing to you?
I would ask him, the first thing that I would ask him is, would they incorporate borders, language, and culture into the political platform that they're going to run upon? Because it encompasses so many other things, and it takes at the very heart the basis of what is America. Would they run?
I agree with you. I defined a nation. Someone asked me when I started the PRS in 94, and I started in radio, how would you define a nation? I said, a nation is defined by. I didn't define a nation. They asked me, how would you define America? I said, America is defined by borders, language, and culture. It applies to every nation on earth, incidentally, Chris. In fact, it applies to every nation on earth except America and Western Europe. They have eschewed borders. They've thrown away their language, and they're cutting up their culture. Yet all of the enemies of the West are very much in love with borders, language, and culture. They live and die by it, don't they?
Absolutely. And I think it is an absolute principle that we've gotten so far away from, and it's so clouded now. And
I got news for you, Chris. Whenever I hear fraudsters on the TV claiming to be conservatives saying, well, if those Republicans get back, we'll have lower taxes and less government, I want to laugh at them. What does that mean, getting back to Reagan? What? That's empty nonsense. Reagan was a mixed bag. Reagan wasn't God. He was a very flawed politician, incidentally. He was as good as we're going to get, but he was very flawed. And I want to go further. No, that's not what you want to get back to. You want to get back to America. America is defined by its borders, language, and culture, not by Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely.
And if you thank you for the call. That's it. I should have given him a free book, Banned in Britain. 1-800-449-8255. Denver Co. Chaz, welcome. You're up. Go ahead.
Hey, Michael. How's it going?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
I think the real heart of everything comes to the importance of the Constitution, and I would ask where they would rate the importance of the Constitution and define the Constitution as their role of being president.
Okay. You're a strict constitutionalist. That's a good one. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to a different topic, which is the war. Texas, Frank, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
As far as the war goes, I was actually referring to the caller as the comparisons you made between the Obama speech the other night, the Bush speech from a couple of years ago, and the Lyndon Johnson speech were just unbelievable. Where did you reach these archives from to get this?
I'm telling you, my staff is the best in the history of talk radio. And when we found the old LBJ speech, it was like it was though Obama lifted the speech from a combination of Johnson, LBJ, in that speech of March 31, 1968, and GW. It was amazing. There was nothing new under the sun, which is why it was depressing, because I think I've heard it all before. Frank, stay in the line. You're getting a free copy of Banned in Britain. Everyone who gets on the air today gets a free copy of Banned in Britain. Let's play one little piece for those of you who missed my brilliant show on Wednesday where I compared Obama to LBJ. Play it again, Sam.
In the end, our security and leadership does not come solely from the strength of our arms. It derives from our people.
The ultimate strength of our country and our cause will lie not in powerful weapons or infinite resources or boundless wealth, but will lie in the unity of our people.
Well, all right. Again, the people. They always revert to the people, but I don't believe it. I believe that the strength of the nation consists both in the weapons and the guts of the people, meaning the guts of the leadership. And I don't think that we have the will to use our weapons. That's the real problem. I'm not the first to say it, but I'll repeat it again. The enemy has very little weaponry to compare with ours, but they have the will to kill us all until they get their way. We have the best and strongest and most powerful weaponry in the world and the weakest will in the world to use what we have. And so, therefore, it's a quotient that needs to be recalibrated. Now, let me create some clarity on this issue. You know, there's a lot of ambiguity about the war in Afghanistan, and I'm sure many of you are opposed to it. In fact, most conservatives probably are. This is a little something that the media will not report. The media wants to make it black and white. They want to make it liberals are against the war and conservatives are for the war. I wouldn't define Newt Gingrich, Sean Hannity, and Karl Rove necessarily as conservatives. I would define them as doctrinaire Republicans. That's much different than conservative, incidentally. But that's kind of a fine point. The majority of Americans are opposed to any foreign wars to begin with right now. They have become more isolationist than they have been, or we have been, I should say, in decades. We've had enough of foreign entanglements. We want out of it. We don't want to see our boys dying in Afghanistan for some warlords, and we don't want to see our treasury further spoiled by Obama and his contractor supporters. That's what it comes down to. So, having said that, let's go to the callers. You know, what do you think? 1-800-449-8255. What would you ask he or she, who I am having dinner with right after the show? That's what I'd like to know. Kansas City, D, go ahead. You're up. Go ahead on Savage Nation.
Yeah, the question I would like to know is if there were no financial perks to being president of the United States or serving in politics, I mean, no worldwide travel for fun on the, you know, people's dollar, if there's no libraries when you leave the presidency, I'd like to know if they'd still want to serve. This question's coming.
All right. You know, Dee, it's an interesting question, but in a certain way, I don't mean to be rude. It's sort of an empty question in one regard. Dee, all is vanity. If you read the Bible, you know that, don't you?
Yes.
I thought about that this morning, actually, when I thought once again about, as though I've done my job, I'm telling you the way it is. I think about it all the time lately because I've had the worst year of my life. You want me to lay in a line? I don't want to sit here and complain to you. I'll just tell you what's going through my mind. I've had one liberal low-life group after another come after me. And frankly, there's only so much that I want to fight for in this world. You know what I mean? Someone else can pick up the baton at a certain point. At least that's what runs through my mind at times. But look, I rarely quit anything in my whole life. I don't think I've ever quit anything. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes you think about it. I mean, Mother Teresa thought about leaving the church because she didn't know if God existed. But she never quit. She never left the church. But she had her doubts. So I have my doubts. Nevertheless, I thought about it this way. I said, you know, it's all vanity. You're one of the voices that'll help save America from Obama. And without you, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not so sure, number one. Number two, so that's a vanity thing. In other words, I'm in it for vanity. It makes me feel important. I get on the air. I have a microphone. People listen to me. I have the attention that I've always wanted as a person of the mind. I've written books. I've been writing since I'm 16 years old. I've been on the radio since 1994. I've been very, very fortunate thus far with a lot of perspiration. I never stop fighting. But the point I'm making is, why am I doing it? Why? Because I want to leave my mark. Okay, so what's that? Vanity. So who was the Christian theologian or prophet who said all is vanity, Bale? Do you remember who said that? Does anyone know who said, huh? I know it's in the Bible, but who wrote all is vanity? Anyone who could cite chapter and verse who said all is vanity, give me a call at 1-800-449-8255. You own a free copy of A Ban of Britain. So let me go on with my thinking, because I'm a man who thinks. Again, 4 in the morning, wake up. This time it wasn't jokes. This time it was, I'm in radio, why? Well, it's vanity. What do you mean vanity? Well, that's all it is. That's all it is. You think anybody else is in the media or writing a book or riding a bicycle or fighting a boxing match for any reason other than vanity? So then you think, okay, so that's mankind. All is vanity. Say, okay, so what's the alternative to vanity? Let's go to the opposite extreme. So a life without ego, a life without vanity, get into the whole Buddhist mishigas. Meaning the whole Buddhist, the mystique of Buddhism, where you shave your head, in essence, put on a saffron robe, and you chant, and you have no ego and you have no vanity. Well, that's about as most the most vain thing I could think of a man doing. Why did I come to that conclusion? Because when you say, I don't want to have vanity, I want to have no vanity, meaning I'm so damn important that I'm going to show I can live without vanity, I can be unlike most men, and I don't need vanity, that's a form of vanity, maybe. Maybe the most magnificent form of vanity there is, or the most obscene form of vanity, is to pretend you have no vanity. Because the minute you go into the monastery, or the church, or the synagogue, or the holy order, what you find out is that there's a very strict hierarchy. They're not all in love and peace and, you know, gurudom. Everyone's not nice in these places. They're mean as hell. And they're extremely hierarchical. So in other words, there's hierarchy within the church, hierarchy within the synagogue, hierarchy within the Buddhist order. So all is vanity. There is nothing but vanity. So therefore, I think I'll stay in radio. Ecclesiastes 1:2 convinced me that since all is vanity and there's no escaping it, and while you're alive, you may as well keep climbing because there's nowhere else to go. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Dream.
Welcome back to the Wit and Wisdom of Michael Savage, Friday edition. And there's plenty to talk about, believe me. Of the making of many books, there is no end. That was also in Ecclesiastes. Well, of the making of many talk shows, there is no end. And as I said to you, I go in and out of these phases. I mean, I get very introspective. I withdraw. And I think very, very deeply about my life and what it means and what I've done and what I want to do. And, you know, I come to the conclusion all is vanity. But at the end of this long internal dialogue with myself, I come back to it's all vanity. There's no way around it. Even if you try to withdraw from vanity by seeking silence, let's say, oh, I'm going to just disappear. I'm going to get a cabin somewhere in the mountains and never be heard from again. Well, how vain is that? How vain is that? All is vanity. Where did it come from? Ecclesiastes. But listen to it. Please listen to it for a minute. Then we'll go back to boring, mundane stuff like politics. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath the man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever, Al Gore. The sun also ariseth. Now, you know, that's where Hemingway got the sun also rises. Listen to this. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new. It hath been already of old time which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things. Neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. Now, what does all of this mean? Some of it I understand. Some of it I don't understand. But when you see in the Bible, Ecclesiastes 1:2, all is vanity, you have to ask yourself, who else would be a politician but a very vain person? But is it only limited to politicians? Can you name a profession where there is no vanity? Can you? Well, we'll start with the obvious. Movie star, vanity. Talk show host, vanity. Newsman, newswoman, vanity. So what professions? Okay, veterinarian, no vanity. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Are they saints? Some of them, they look like saints to me. That's why I give some money to animal groups. They look like saints to me. I mean, maybe there's vanity in that too. What do I know when it comes down to what's inside a person's head? Does that make them less vain, more vain, better person, worse person? I mean, I go to work and save gorillas. I can join a gorilla group killing poachers in Africa. Maybe that's something I'd like to do with the rest of my life. Join a militia band that kills poachers. That would give me great pleasure to see them strung up from a tree, anyone who kills a gorilla or kills an elephant for its tusks. You know, I'd like to see them like Mussolini hanging from a tree. Maybe that would be a good way to spend some years. What do I know? Is that vanity? All is vanity. So now we're back to the mundane. Here we go. The part I like about this is that when you read the Bible, you find out some of the greatest literary titles in history all came from the Bible or from Shakespeare. And much of Shakespeare came from the Bible, incidentally. You may not know this, but it's true. So people have written books on that. So the sun also ariseth. Hemingway, the sun also rises. You could find other things. What was the other one, Beowulf, that you noticed that came from your big title? Oh, here, the last one. There is no remembrance of former things. So Proust, remembrances of things past. Again, he must have gotten it from the Bible. Now compare it to the non-biblical, abiblical, anti-biblical literature, so-called, of today. And you realize why we are in such a desert of literature today in the world. Because it's all so meaningless. So I hope I've just disambiguated the phrase, all is vanity. By the way, there's a pretty picture, actually a touching picture of a gorilla on my website on the bottom left, of a mama gorilla and a baby gorilla. Because I finally heard from the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund of what they did with some of the little amount of money I gave them, and I was really happy to see that it went for a good cause. So this is the second group that's answered and said, here's what we did with the donation. I like that. And so I encourage you to go to the same. The reason I'm posting these, see, here's an interesting thing. Am I posting these to show you what a great guy I am because of my vanity? No. I'm doing it to encourage you to donate to the groups that I carefully picked. The California Highway Patrol Widows and Orphans Fund. Legitimate, good fun. Okay. The Fossey Gorilla Fund, good fun. The International Animal Group that saved a herd of elephants with a donation I made, good fun. I wish I could say that about some other groups that are giving me the big laughter job. I'll let you know who they are soon, too. The ones who won't tell.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in
it
love?
It is Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation, the voice of America.
You're the girl I'm
the Cleftones
of.
From my old Jamaica high school.
You're the
Cleftones. Wonder if there's any Cleft left. Are there any of the Clefts listening to this show? Maybe we knew each other. What do I know? Anyway, Tom, here's a headline. Thanks, guys. All right, thank you very much. Tom Brokaw, unheard in New York highway wreck that kills one just out of New York. I just want to focus on this as the dumbest headline of the day. Tom Brokaw, unhurt in New York highway wreck that kills one. That's grammatically insane. That means he was hurt and then he's unhurt? Wouldn't it be Tom Brokaw not injured? What do you mean unhurt? That's like a weird use of a word. Tom Brokaw, unhurt. So he was hurt, now he's unhurt? Anyway. Former NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw and his wife say they were involved in a three-car accident on New York City highway that killed one woman. Neither Brokaw nor his wife was hurt. Whatever. Police say the SUV driver was thrown from the car and killed. His 69-year-old Brokaw and his wife Meredith were not injured. All right, there's no comment to that one. Just it was the unhurt part of it that got to me. What do you mean unhurt? That's like unhurt. I mean, it makes you think. What do you mean, they were hurt, they're not hurt? Anyway, we were talking about more important things. I was trying to disambiguate the war. Dinner with Savage. Your dinner with Savage tonight. I'm leaving 1 hour early. I have a dinner with a prominent individual who will probably run for president, and he or she has a great chance of defeating everyone. And he or she is instantly recognizable on a national scene. I want to know what you would ask this individual if you were lucky enough to be invited to my table tonight. What is the most important issue that you want addressed during the campaign. I know what I'm going to suggest. If I'm not going to sit there and say, look, here's what you should do. I don't go that way. See, I'm a much different person off the air than you may imagine. And what I am is extremely quiet and very polite to strangers in particular. I'm very formal, by the way, and cordial, incidentally. Say, oh, this is all an act. No, it isn't. No, it is not an act at all. This is my persona on the radio. This is how I've, you know, got the attention of 10 million people, is by being able to reach through the electrons, sending the electrons vibrating through your radio speaker or your headphones and stimulating certain neurons in your head, boys and girls, and making thought bubbles pop up inside your head. That's what I'm capable of. I'm very good at pictograms and pictographic descriptions. Nobody in the business of entertainment or news can beat me on pictographic explanations or descriptions. Nobody. For some reason, I'm good at pictograms. When I speak, you actually see images. They're not mere words. And if you actually analyze this, you'll come to understand that my images make sense to you. So even if you oppose me politically, at least you understand the clarity of my thought. You understand what I'm saying to you? And it gives you an opportunity to answer yourself. You don't have to call me. See, if you're really a thinking person, you can rethink your positions. So let's say you're a left-winger who voted for Obama and you're not so sure anymore because you see that from one issue to another, he seems like just another politician. You wanted to believe in him, but you're not willing to admit it yet. Now it comes down to the war. And you say, oh, my God, this is Vietnam all over again. Well, so on Wednesday, I played sound bites from Obama comparing it with Bush. Then I played sound bites from Obama comparing it with LBJ. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm getting at is government media complex, military industrial complex. I'm not so sure that we should be there. In fact, I said so the other day. I'm pretty sure we shouldn't be there. I'm pretty sure that after 6 years, if we can't accomplish in 6 years defeating the terrorism or the insurgents in Afghanistan, what makes you think we're going to do it in 1 year? Because it's going to take 6 months to get the troops there, and then a year later they're supposed to withdraw them? Why can they do in 1 year what they haven't been able to do in six? Oh, I get it, because Obama's a greater commander-in-chief than George Bush. I see. Obama had great training in the military that I don't know about. Maybe he was in the Kenyan army? I mean, I'll take it back. If you could prove to me that Obama served in the Kenyan Air Force or in the Indonesian tank brigades, okay, then I'll take it back. But so far as I can tell, he has no military experience whatsoever. So therefore, why would he be a better commander-in-chief than George Bush? For all of his faults, at least George Bush flew jets in the National Guard. Whether you believe it or not, doesn't matter to me. He flew them, okay? He didn't go to war, but he flew jets. That's good enough for me. And he was pretty sure about what he was doing in Iraq. Now, somewhere along the way, he lost the way. Somewhere along the way, the contractors got control of him. Somewhere along the way, he lost his idea of why he was in Iraq. It should have ended a long time earlier. But we've gone through that. How many more Americans do you want to die? Do you want to die on foreign soil, and for what is all I'm asking? And you have to ask yourself only one question. Don't answer me. Ask yourself, if you had a son, 18 years of age, a son that you saw being born, coming from the wife that you married, that you loved, would you want the product of that union to die on a foreign battlefield? And if so, why? For what? What would the cause be? Because if you can't answer that question, you shouldn't even be involved in this debate at all, frankly. If you don't know how to answer that question, you don't have any play in this debate whatsoever. You have no right to even debate the question. That's how I feel, because there's nothing at stake for you. What's at stake for you? You don't care about Mrs. Smith's son. You never did. All you care about is pushing your agenda one way or the other, whether it's Republican agenda or a Democrat agenda, left or right. That's not how I see things. So I'm pretty adamant on this issue. When it comes to life and death, war and peace, you have to be very, very careful with what you say, because someone else's son is going to take a bullet for your mouth. And so I therefore oppose any more troops for Afghanistan at the end of the day. And I think we should start withdrawing as soon as we have subdued the enemy and built enough fortresses in the area to maintain some semblance of control over the area. There's absolutely no reason to send any more boys to be slaughtered in Afghanistan, particularly since they're fighting with their hands behind their back, number one, with rules of engagement that nobody can fight with, and number two, since they are limited in what kind of air power they can use. Now, I must say that I was glad to read this morning that the U.S. military unleashed a tremendous barrage, a fusillade, against al-Qaeda or the Taliban. I confuse them, frankly. Let's just say the evil guys. Let's say the evil, the enemy. Let's make it real simple, the enemy of our way of life. Does that work for you? Is that pretty clear? I know many of you don't even know who they are. Let's put it to you this way. They'd like to kill you or convert you. They'd like to put your wife in a full body covering. They'd like to make sure she can never drive a car again. They'd like to make certain that you can't go to the movies. They'd like to make certain that you can't do almost anything that you like to do. So if that doesn't make them your enemy, I'd like to know why you're on this side and you haven't joined them. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the voice of America, the real America, the savage nation. Not the wimp America. Not Republican light. Not the middle of the road with a Fox Network run by Saudi Arabia and their puppets. It is the last of the independents, the last of the Mohegans, Mike Savage. Rock and Roll Friday. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. What would you ask this invisible candidate who will remain anonymous, who I'm meeting in about an hour in an undisclosed location in San Francisco? And the conversation is set to be off the books, meaning I'm not going to refer to it at all. I want to know what you think is the most important issue that this individual should address during the campaign. That's it. I mean, I know what I'm going to, suggest if he asks me or she asks me. But I'm not going to tell you because it will give it away. But anyway, here's a good question. Let's say I'm sitting down with a future potential president of the United States, and I say to him or her, can you change a tire yourself on an icy road? Because that's the giveaway to me. Now, I know, for example, I know for sure Obama can't change a tire. Let's say Obama was driving in Chicago and his car broke down. I don't know, maybe he could. I think Obama might be able to change a tire. I would say that Newt Gingrich could never change a tire. His hands are too small, too pink, and too fat. I would think that he would scream and call AAA. I'm very serious. Think about it. Think of all the candidates for the presidency, and it's not a bad question. Can you change a tire yourself on an icy road? I mean, can you or not? I've done it when I was young. I don't say I want to do it. The new cars are a giveaway anyway. I'm talking about changing a tire before they had those European jack points in the car. I'm talking about when it was really risky. Remember when you had those jacks in the 50s and 60s? They were so unstable, man. You had to jack the car up, and the wind is blowing, and your hand's underneath the wheel well, and the car's moving back and forth on a road in Vermont to New Hampshire in the winter on a ski trip, and you wish to God you weren't there, because any moment your mother would get a call from one of your friends that your son is dead because a car fell on him while he was changing a tire on an icy road. You remember those days? Today, though, it's easy because everybody put in those side point jack inserts, and they don't slip around. But can you name one of the candidates who could not change a tire? McCain could change a tire. I mean, I don't like his politics because he was for the McCain-Feingold this and that. And I think he's a phony, but all right, he could change a tire. Al Gore could not change a tire. I think Tipper Gore could change a tire, but not Al Gore. In fact, I'm pretty sure Tipper Gore could change a tire and change his diaper at the same time, by the way. But George Bush could change a tire. Let's see. Let's go down the list. You know, it kind of tells you a lot of, if you run back through the years, like it was Eisenhower versus Adlai Stevenson, the reason Eisenhower won is because America knew he could change a tire. And they felt that the pinhead intellectual Adlai Stevenson could not change a tire. They knew he couldn't. They just knew he couldn't. Could Nixon change a tire? We knew that JFK could change a tire on a car. That's for sure. P.T. Boat. Nixon, it was ambiguous. Even though Nixon really won the election and it was trick thrown over to him by certain folks with deep barrely voices who wore woolen suits without underwear in Ohio, the fact is that Nixon could also change a tire. We're pretty sure of that. A-E-I-O-U, if you know what I mean. So now let's go to the next election. Who's next, Bay? Well, I'm trying to think of like where they could change a tire. Pardon me for getting... Well, Gore versus who? Bush. Ford versus who? Who do you run against? Who did Ford run against? Goddard? He ran against Goddard-Belt? Carter. Carter couldn't change a tire. Carter is all PR. Carter is all public relations, the hammer and the wood and the, you know, the whole thing. I don't trust the thing of him. I don't like the guy. Anyone who has relatives who drink, you know, snake juice and they think that they see the Lord in their living room after they drink strychnine and swing a snake around and they're on the side of the suicide bombers. Sorry, I can't get too warmed up to him. But that's why Ford won. Gerald Ford, remember the guy who tripped on the... The reason Gerald Ford won is because he was a rugged-looking guy, played football. You knew he could change a tire. Jimmy Carter, you felt, was a faker who couldn't change a tire. Him and Bill Moyers together couldn't change a tire. I don't think they could change a wire, frankly, in a stereo if they had to. Now, who ran after Ford and Carter? Who was the next one in line? Reagan versus who? Reagan versus Carter. No, Reagan could change a tire. Absolutely. So he won because he could change a tire, and Carter was ambiguous as to whether he could change a tire. Who came after Reagan? I don't remember. LBJ versus who? Who was the next in line? Bush Sr. Bush Sr., I don't know what the tires with him. Let's let that go. I mean, 80 years old, he's still jumping out of airplanes. But he has an effete thing about him. And I think that worked against him with LBJ, because LBJ, you knew, could lift the car with his bare hands and change a tire with his teeth if he had to. So that's why he won, because people felt that there was more masculinity in LBJ as opposed to Bush won. So then after LBJ, we had Nixon, right? Nixon? Did Nixon come in after LBJ? Yeah, he ended the war. Nixon won, and then Nixon could... And we didn't know. Could Nixon change a tire thing? I wonder if he could change a tire. I'm not sure. And then we have... it was McCain versus Obama. So that's a difficult one, because I already said McCain could change a tire. Wait a minute. I wasn't wrong. I said Obama could change a tire, too. Obama could change a tire. I mean, he's definitely not a weakling. I mean, you know, Obama's a tough guy. There's no question about it. He's very athletic. He reminds me of a thing. There's many differences. Is that Joe Lewis was filled with humility and was a real American. Definitely born in America and loved America. I was watching the saga of Joe Lewis, one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time, last night on some, I don't know what it was. It was very interesting, those of you into the pugilistic arts. Joe Lewis, admittedly one of the greatest fighters of all time, enlisted, he gave away a $70,000 purse in 40, 41, 42, which was a lot of money. I don't know what it would be equal to today. I can't imagine. 7 million? What do I know? At least that. He gave it away to the war effort, and then he enlisted in the military. And he went around the country giving free exhibitions. You know what the government did to him as a reward? They sued him for back taxes. They claimed that although he wasn't making money from the free exhibitions he was giving, he was donating it. The IRS sued Joe Lewis and said, even though you didn't take the money you earned, even though you gave it away to the war effort, we're charging you penalties and interest for the money you gave away to the military and military cause. And Joe Lewis was put into a position that he never was able to climb out of. He had to become a wrestler. But before he became a wrestler, it was horrible. He went into some crippling fights to raise money to pay the IRS. One of which was against, in the 1950s, toward the end of his career, he almost got destroyed, against one of the greatest fighters in history, Marciano. Now, Marciano was astounding. If you actually watch the footage of Marciano fighting Lewis, and they said that Joe Lewis didn't want to, Marciano didn't want to fight Joe Lewis because Marciano, remember, Italian white man, Joe Lewis black man. Marciano grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts. You'd think, oh, right away, hated blacks. He didn't. He revered and loved Joe Lewis. Loved him. He didn't want to fight him because he said, I'm going to hurt him. He was an old man by that point. But Joe Lewis needed the money. So Marciano almost kills him in the ring. It was so heartbreaking to watch this thing. Then he becomes a wrestler, Joe Lewis. Then he becomes a greeter in Las Vegas to show you what the government can do to people, even the good people of America. You know, it's an amazing story. Anyway, that's a little side note. He could change a tire, that's for sure. And so could Obama. So I'm not so sure about the next election.
Savage.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels.
TGIF. Thank God it is Friday. What a long week. This has been, my God.
Just as I gave
That's all. All right, give him a hot shot and we'll see him. 1-800-449-8255. 212. What am I looking at here? I mean, I have a sweeper for my computer. I love this little thing. It was given to me years ago by an affiliate in another city. I love it. It's like a computer screen sweeper. I got to admit it. I'm very, very fanatic about like cleanliness. Does that mean something's wrong with me? I don't like sloppy people. I don't trust like houses that are messy. Do you? I won't take a glass of water in a house like that. My mother was fanatic about. Like we had friends whose glasses were like gummy. Woo. They'd offer you like a glass of water with like it wasn't washed properly. Ugh. You know what I mean? Like you look at a glass. Cleanliness is as close to godliness as you're going to get. Well, anyway, whatever. So I'm going to go early tonight. In fact, I'm going to be leaving here in about a half hour, and my good friend is coming in, Jeff Kuhner, to fill in for the last hour. I'm going to have dinner with a prominent individual who will likely run for the presidency in 2012, and he or she is instantly recognizable on the national scene. This is no far, distant horse. And that indicates that things have changed politically. Everyone knows that the conservative base is critical to the election, as they should have known a long time ago. But they found out by now that they can't win without us. That's something that Schmuck McCain's managers didn't know, and he lost. And if Palin keeps it up, she's going to lose too, I'm going to tell you right now. And that's why there's a big change coming up here. Very soon I'll be able to tell you who it was, but not tonight. Because I'm sworn to secrecy. What is the most important question? What is the most important issue, rather, to you? Is it the war? Is it health care? Is it the ending cap and trade? Is it, what is it? Illegal aliens? You talk about the tire analogy. I just training in that department, so it's an easy step into that job. Very easy to jump from one line of work to the same line of work. Just one is legal and one, they didn't go to trade school to learn how to remove a tire. And it's done. They don't have to change. You don't have to change it in the snow anymore. So I'm not so sure that changing tires in the snow is a, it's cute, but actually it's actually not a bad. I used to say whoever has more hair wins. By that analogy, any woman could beat any man. Remember I said that to you 10 years ago? In any election, it's whoever has more hair wins. And it was pretty true going back. Historically, it was pretty true. That's why in England, the Whigs wear wigs, because they knew that when they were bald, they wouldn't sell. But to bring back, there are very few bald presidents when you think about it. It's about hair. It's all show business. Whoever has more hair wins, which means if it's Palin versus Obama, she wins. See, I don't know if it applies to gender jumping. I'm not so sure about that. Usually in men, whoever has more hair wins. So that would exclude any old guy like this. Who's somewhat baldy on the Republican side who thinks he could be president? Who's fooling himself? He's finished. He's got the mark of Cain, and he's finished. The mark of McCain is over. I thought by now him and Cindy would be running a Buick dealership in Mongolia. Actually, it wouldn't be such a bad idea. The Buick's selling well in China. He would have been better off taking a dealership in China, frankly, in Mongolia. If he only listened to me and dropped out a year ago, McCain had opened a couple of Buick dealerships in Tibet, he'd be flying high right now. Because look at how much money he could have made. They're buying Buicks like crazy over there. It's the number one selling car in China for American-made cars. It's funny how things are. It's like the 50s over there. Sometimes I think if I ever go there, I'm going to see all of my deceased relatives in China. They're going to be driving Buick LeSabres or, if they're rich, the top of the line. They all judge each other the way we used to do in the 50s here. Do you remember how distinct, how everybody on the block would look at the car your father had by, like, the year, the model? Does that still go on? I wonder. It has to go on. They make believe it doesn't. No, now they try to, like, democratize everyone in L.A. We all drive a Prius. So how do they show off? That's what I want to know. If they don't show off by Buick, like the line of Buicks, or like Cadillac or Olds, if you had like an Olds 88, then a 98, then the top of the line, you were like as close to Rockefeller as you could get, because Rockefeller drove a Cadillac in their mind. If you came around with a Cadillac in the neighborhood I grew up in when I was a kid, you were probably related to Nelson Rockefeller, especially if you had air conditioning ducts in the back package shelf. Remember in those days when they came around? People used to even put fake ducts in their car to show that air conditioning. You won't believe how symbolic cars used to be. But are they as symbolic? And if not so, let's say people only drive for utility today. So what's the reverse snobism now? They all drive a Prius in Beverly Hills, right? And that's not all true, but they make believe that they're down, you know. So what do they show off with? I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, who's more liberal? Who is attached to more liberal causes? Who gave more money to a liberal cause? Most of them don't have any money. I mean, you look at guys like Larry David, you know they're cheap. You know they don't give a dime away. Between the guy who played Borat, what's his name? I forget his name. The guy from England. I saw that movie where he just did it. I saw it on TV. It was one of the most nauseatingly sick movies I've ever seen in my life. Sacha Baron Cohen did Borat. What's the name of it where he plays Bruno, terrible movie, disgusting. The man is mentally ill. I mean, I thought Howard Stern was sick. I thought Howard Stern should have been in Creedmoor in youth, but of course they came along with medication around his teen years, which permitted him to go into radio and become a pornographer, and so he did very well because pornography sells. I understand that. But, you know, Howard Stern is like a sane, normal person compared to Sacha Baron Cohen. Sacha Baron Cohen is functionally insane. The movie I saw, I forget the name of it. What's it called again? Where he plays the Bruno. It's disgustingly boring, number one. Predictable in every scene. And then it gets more and more and more insultingly demented, where he seeks laughter from things where there's no laughter. The man should be committed to a mental hospital for the rest of his natural life. Between Sacha Baron Cohen and Larry David and a few people in the media, it's enough to make you understand where Al-Qaeda is coming from, because they don't want this in their country. I hope you understand what I just said to you. They don't want this salacious filth, the sewer pipe of the most demented minds of our generation. They don't want it piped into their daughter's bedroom. They don't want their son watching this garbage. Do you understand this? Do you understand that there are mentally ill people who have gotten very far and very rich in the media, who have polluted the American mind and are now trying to pollute the world's mind, and there are people willing to die to keep that pollution out of their houses? Do you understand where I'm coming from? No. Okay. You want me to talk about Climategate? You want me to talk about Goregate? What's new about that? Al Corleone, I called him that 5 years ago. So everyone's finding out now what he is. Okay. Tiger Woods, any more Tiger Woods jokes? Lying in the middle of the road snoring, say the neighbors. That's an interesting one. I mean, we played it out already. Lying in the middle of the road snoring. We can all figure out what happened. Okay, shall we run through it? Just as a weekend review, we know what happened. Yes, he did. Yes, he can, and yes, he did. We know what that's all about. So, what was the wife? Apparently, her mother from Sweden was in the house, and his mother was in the house, right? So what happened? What happened is this. This is the guess, the best guesstimate. He fell asleep, whatever, on prescription. Who knows? She has nothing to do after Thanksgiving, bored with all the relatives around. And she goes through the messages, and she finds these calls, and she wakes him up. You lousy son of what? What are you? And she goes crazy and plays him the message. He runs out of his house into his car, and she's chasing him with a golf club. And he jumps in the car like half delirious and crashes into a fire hydrant. She smashes, you son of a cheating yellow, and smashes in the window. And that's the story. Now already the rest of you hear the whole didn't happen because he's got the machine. That's a fantasy. That's a fantasy. We did that already this week. Okay. Tom Brokaw involved in New York City highway crash. I played that already. What else is on my website? You need to look at the SEAL story. You got to look at and help them. Snowing in Houston, one of the earliest snowstorms ever. Al Gore's nowhere to be seen. I told you, every time an early winter comes, Al Gore goes underground. He's not even going to Copenhagen. I don't know why not. I mean, they're giving something away in Copenhagen that's free now, and Copenhagen prostitutes offer free climate summit sex. I mean, that's a motivation for little liberals. What would you like to talk about? Thomas, San Diego, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation. Thomas, San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation. Are you there, Thomas? No, he's not there. We hang up on him. We go to New York City, WOR. Bob, welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, my main concern is the war against Islamic fascism. And the reason that we've had so many problems with this war is that everyone refers to the different locales as being different wars. These are one war. We didn't do this during World War II. We didn't say, oh, that's the Japanese war, and that's the Czechoslovakian war, and that's the British war, and that's the German war. This is one war. Neither Bush nor now Obama has the...
Well, but what are you saying? What are you saying? What are you suggesting? Where does the enemy reside? Where is his capital?
Well, there is, you know, it's a little bit, it's different in that, from that aspect from World War II.
It is different, Bob. And Bob, a study just came out, and it's very important that everyone listening to the show hear it, including my worst enemy. More Muslims have died in suicide and in suicide attacks than non-Muslims over the last 10 years. Do you know that?
Absolutely. Yep.
They are slaughtering innocent people who are Muslims. They're killing their own co-religionists. They are not, in that sense, Muslims. They are a criminal band hiding behind a religion in order to justify their murder, which is really all about territory and power. In that regard, it is very difficult to locate them. You almost have to make them come out of the woodwork. So again, to review, I have the study up on michaelsavage.com. It's a very important one. More Muslims have died in suicide bombing attacks than non-Muslims in the last number of years. And that's because the enemy, who says he's doing it in the name of his religion, is actually, as some have said, he's hijacked his religion. Or in essence, he is using religion as an excuse for murder. I'll be right back.
Savage. Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist your voice is calling. 'Tis twilight time.
'Tis the Savage Nation, the Rock and Roll Friday edition of the Savage Nation. And as I say, I'm leaving early in about 10 minutes. I'm leaving the show, and my good friend Jeff Kuhner will fill in for the last hour and hold down the fort. I've got to go to dinner with a prominent Republican who will probably run for the presidency, and he or she is instantly recognizable on the national scene. And I want to know what you think is the most important question that you would raise if you were lucky enough to be at that table. I'm not going to steer the conversation. I'm there to be, frankly, to listen. I approach things by listening. I'm very different when I meet people personally. If they got something to say, if they have nothing to say, I generally don't meet them. But if they got something to say, I want to hear them. I know what I think. I listen to me every day. Why don't I want to talk? I don't go to dinner and talk unless they have nothing to say. Then I don't stop talking. Okay, but putting that aside, if you were me, what would you ask? That's all. It's a simple question. That's all. New York City, Joe, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, the most important thing that you're going to ask this presidential candidate is to get you off that list.
Well, not to get me off the list, but I certainly will bring it up. I intend to bring Congressman Culberson's letter, which he sent to Secretary Clinton and thus far has gotten no answer. And I would say to him, what is the likelihood of you intervening on my behalf? I would say that.
Oh, yeah, but that's the first thing. Forget Obama, forget politics. That's the first thing you do. What are you going to come on? If he's a true defender of freedom of speech, that's the first thing.
I am twisting in the wind. It's going to go on a year this May. And Culberson is the only politician who's put his neck out for me. You know that?
Yeah, well, let's see if this cat puts she puts her neck out for this. That's
okay. All right. That's very nice, Joe. Let me send you a free. You have a copy of Band in Britain yet?
I got it. Forget it. I had to eat Tylenol.
No, you're getting another one because I want you to give it away to your most liberal friend in a plain brown wrapper. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento Buck, go ahead. Your next up question, please.
Yeah, first of all, I think I know who this person is, and you have my support. We're all going to support behind you. But anyway, I would ask him how he would look in the camera on his campaign and tell the American people what the socialism of the last 25 years and the lying media has damaged this country and how he is going to fix it and prosecute pieces of filth like Chris Matthews, who referred to the military West Point as enemy camp.
Well, that man is a demented individual. He's been a longtime Democrat, which is perfectly fine, but he's also the type of individual who should have been thrown out of broadcasting a long time ago. If you remember, softball basically called for the death of Rush Limbaugh. Now, I may not like some of what Rush does, but that's irrelevant. Calling for a man's death, a fellow person's death in the media, is really quite another thing. To call West Point the enemy camp is a giveaway of NBC. Now, NBC was just purchased by Comcast. You know that as well.
Yes.
Okay. So, the you know, that's where the buck stops here. Who owns Comcast is the next question. That's the person to address if you want him thrown off the air. He's throwing himself off the air. Look at the lowest rating cable shows in the business. Number one is that poor guy with the blue eyes who can't get out of the starting gate. What's his name? You know, the blonde guy, the gray-haired young guy. Anderson Cooper is the lowest rated of all shows. Next to him is that fraud, ambiguous human being, that kind of, that one Pat, her name, whatever, Rachel Pat, where every statement she makes is like some kind of, you know, ambiguous, excuse me, everything she does is mock sarcastic or ironic, I once said. Irony is a very poor form of humor if you use it in every statement you make. Then there's the guy behind her, the tall guy who urinates on himself allegedly. They have to mop the floor up. That's the word inside the MSNBC studios. He sounds like a tough guy, but they say he urinates on himself. Another one, every statement is an irony, and everyone that he opposes is evil and no good. And there's no humor there. There's no intelligence. It's just predictable. Their shows are in the toilet. The reason is people actually know what they're going to say, and they've heard it 1,000 times, and there's nothing to listen for. What's intriguing is the highest-rated shows, you know what they are. It's O'Reilly and Hannity on Fox, and Beck, rather. And the reason is that they do reflect the mainstream of America. I don't care what the media says. We know that most Americans are center-right conservatives. We know that. Every poll done by every legitimate company says most Americans identify as centrist to the right. They don't identify as centrist to the left. This is very unusual that we have a country hijacked by an extremely leftist wing of the Democrat Party when the country has moved to the right. That it's not only the Democrats who are running America. It's the most extremist, out-of-touch-with-America wing of the party. Think about it. We've never had a bigger discongruity between the element of the party in power and the people that I know of. I don't know of it. The people have never been more to the center-right than now in every poll. And we have, to the left of the left, the furthest fringe of the left running the country in the form of Obama and that wing of the party. It's not even a centrist Democrat. It's not, you know, Scoop Jackson running the Democrat Party. It's not even LBJ running the Democrat Party. It's not the Democrat Party at all. It's the SPUSA. It's the Socialist Party USA. Only they've gotten so smart they don't say it. Don't you understand what's going on here? I believe that any American who is pro-business, pro-family, pro-military, pro-police, and can change a tire will win the election. If they look like they can take off their coat and tie, get down and change a tire in the snow, they're going to win the election. That goes for any man or woman. And I can tell you, Sarah Palin could change a tire. That woman could change a tire on a tractor in the snow. So I would think she's in the running for sure. She is definitely in the running. And I'm not going to divulge to you who it is that I'm having dinner with tonight, dinner with Savage. But I'm leaving in about 5 minutes to an undisclosed location in San Francisco. And I will report for duty bright and early Monday, right here on the Savage Nation. Coming up next, Jeff Kuhner for the last hour. If something happens, Jeff, I'll call the show with some breaking news right here on the Savage Nation. Be here? Well, there's nowhere else to be. Not on radio. This is the Savage Nation.
Hang on. Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times filling in for the talk radio heavyweight champion of the world, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. As all of you know, members of the Savage Nation, Michael is now on his way to dinner with a very, very prominent Republican, somebody who was almost certain to be a very major contender in the 2012 Republican primary campaign for the presidency. And Michael, now this dinner may be one of the most important defining moments in American history. The person that Michael will be meeting with tonight could very easily be the GOP standard bearer going up against a very weak and very vulnerable Barack Obama. This person could very easily be the next president of the United States. Michael is now on the verge of breaking bread with this person. A lot of important issues will be discussed. And most importantly, what do you, the members of the great Savage Nation, what would you like Michael to ask this Republican presidential contender, whoever that person may be? Do you think that that person should take a stand against the surge in Afghanistan? Do you think that that person should come out with a clear position on securing our southern border? What do you think about their positions regarding perhaps nationalized health care or the stimulus package? Or what would they do to revive the American economy? I want to hear from you, members of the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Michael, my friend, I want to thank you so much for, again, this wonderful opportunity to fill in for you. Again, tonight, you keep making history on radio. And again, tonight, I believe you're on the verge of serving this country once more and making history. And my friend, I can't tell you what an honor and a privilege it is for me to fill in for you, to enable you to go to this very important dinner. To all of you out there, please go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolutely blockbuster stories you have to get to. In particular, there are two that I want to focus on. They're right at the top of michaelsavage.com. There are now increasing calls among many people in the United States, but even within the Hollywood community, that Al Gore, his Academy Award for An Inconvenient Truth, which is now turning out to be an inconvenient lie, his propaganda film on global warming, that Academy Award be rescinded and revoked. And yet, as ClimateGate gathers steam, as ClimateGate gets stronger and stronger and is now spreading across from Britain over the Atlantic and now coming to the United States, as we now realize that the rot and corruption within the climate science community now potentially could infect even NASA itself, which Al Gore and many of these liberal Democrats have been using their bogus science over the last decade to buttress the phony claims that the world is in fact warming when it is in reality cooling. This crisis is now on the verge of hitting the United States of America. It is now creating a huge storm in England and across Europe. And yet, as this goes on, there is another key story on michaelsavage.com. The Democrats are now claiming there's a non-scandal. Congressman Ed Markey, one of the most liberal members on Capitol Hill, this is a non-issue. This is a non-scandal, according to Markey. And more than that, now we have found out that Senator Barbara Boxer, as I talked about on last night's show, is now calling for an investigation not into the fraud, not into the scientists who we now know cooked the books, cooked the science, distorted, manipulated the evidence, and suppressed countervailing evidence that refuted the fact that the global temperatures are rising. But in fact, the science and the evidence showed the temperatures have either been flatlining or cooling. Instead of calling for a criminal investigation of those leading scientists, both in Europe and here in the United States, she is calling for what she calls email theft gate, an investigation into the hackers, the whistleblowers who went there and broke into their computer services at East Anglia University, their computer files, and got into those emails and exposed the fraud and the charade that global warming is. Now the Democrats are feeling that ClimateGate is about to destroy their entire green socialist agenda, from cap and trade to carbon taxes, to even now this UN climate summit, which many Democrats and Obama today just announced. Not only is he going, but he is going to push for a dramatic cut in carbon emissions in this country. That means higher taxes, slower economic growth. That means that your heating bills are going to go up. Your gas bills are going to go up. You're going to be paying more at the pump. Obama is now undeterred. It's like hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And as all of this is going on, now the Democrats yesterday began their first offensive on health care in the Senate. Now they are looking not only to ram their cap and trade agenda at the UN climate summit, but now in the Senate, they are looking to pass nationalized health care. And remarkably, almost amazingly, it was the Republicans who came out in defense of Medicare. At the heart of the Senate health care bill is nearly a $500 billion cut in Medicare benefits. Rationing is already coming. It is there in the Senate bill. If you impose $464 billion in cuts, these are savage cuts, to what you're going to be paying hospitals, nursing homes, hospices, you are now having seniors bear the brunt of this healthcare overhaul. Already, it is now rationing through the back door. Already, seniors are going to suffer from these massive cuts to Medicare. And John McCain came out and said, I am adding an amendment to this Senate healthcare bill that now says no to these cuts. And the bill should go back to committee. If you want a way to fund or pay for this healthcare bill, you find another way. But you don't do it on the backs of seniors. You don't do it on the backs of the elderly. You don't do it on the backs of those that are the most weakest and vulnerable in our society. They have paid their dues. They have worked hard their entire life to pay into the Medicare and Social Security system. They can no longer work. And yet it is the non-productive that suffer in every nationalized healthcare regime. We just got a taste of it yesterday. But the Democrats, who for years said they were championing Medicare, who for years said they were championing Medicaid, now all of a sudden, when the Republicans in the 1990s, if you remember, members of the Savage Nation, when Republicans said Medicare is financially unsustainable, we don't want to cut the benefits, but let's add some market reforms. Let's change the way these services are delivered. Let's have the private sector take over this more and more. Bill Clinton in 1996, he almost crucified Bob Dole on that issue. Seniors were going to be out on the streets, according to Bill Clinton and Democrats. They wouldn't have their health care. They'd be eating out of garbage bins. They'd be thrown out of hospital windows if Bob Dole had his way. And now they are on the verge of passing the greatest cut, the greatest slash in the budget of Medicare in history. And they turned down that amendment, and the mainstream media was quiet. Then the liberals suddenly became quiet. They are now quiet on ClimateGate. It is now 14 days and counting. None of the major TV networks are speaking out on this growing scandal, the greatest scandal in modern science. They are now quiet on the Democrats' plans for rationing health care for seniors. They are silent in the face of draconian, savage cuts to Medicare. And so, as Michael meets tonight with this prominent Republican, who may very likely be the next president of the United States, what do you think his questions should be to this individual? Perhaps it should be, what will you do to undo nationalized health care if it's passed? Maybe that's a question many of you are pondering. There are many questions. I want to hear from you. Let's quickly go to the phone lines. Let's go to Jeff in Washington, D.C. Jeff, Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff. My question would be, you know, to power. Would you bring back the dollar instead of us being owned practically by the Chinese? Would you bring America back to where it should be? That's my question.
That's an excellent question, Jeff. I think that's something Michael may easily. This to me is one of the most criminal consequences of Obama's tax and spend agenda over the last 11 months. His stimulus package, besides not working, besides not restoring economic recovery, besides crippling us with budget deficits as far as the eye can see, has most ominously put us now in the trap of being beholden to communist China. We now have become economic slaves to China. They now own our national debt. Will this Republican candidate finally champion an America First economic policy? This is Jeff Kooner, sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We'll be right back after this break. What questions do you want Michael to ask this Republican? 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Again, this is Jeff Kooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The number to call, 1-800-449-8255. As Michael is now probably on his way, he may even be at the restaurant right now. He's at a minimum in his car. As he goes on his way to have this major dinner, perhaps an historic dinner, with a very powerful, influential Republican who will most likely be the 2012 Republican GOP standard bearer against a weak, vulnerable Obama. What questions do you have for Michael that you think Michael should ask to this candidate? I want to hear from you, members of the Savage Nation. Let's go to Tom in Chicago. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, I would ask how, if cap and trade does go through, and I hope it doesn't, how he could, or she, whoever the person is, could reverse that, because this global warming is a hoax. Climate change is affected mostly by solar activity. And I don't know why people don't talk about that more. It has mostly to do with the sun. It has nothing to do with human activity.
Tom, according to Al Gore, you're a flat earther. You're a global warming denier. You're almost like a Holocaust denier, Tom. According to them, the science is settled. It's been absolutely settled. The guy, just yesterday gave an interview to the London Times, where he said thousands and thousands and thousands of scientists have now agreed that there is a consensus. It's a settled issue. And anybody who disagrees, like you or I, well, we're cranks. You and I we're basically lunatics. We're nutcases. We're people who belong in a padded cell. Tom, you are completely right. You are so right. Throughout all of recorded human history, global temperatures go up and they dip. They go up and they dip. And I've said this before, and I know Dr. Savage has mentioned this repeatedly, but you can't mention it enough. If global warming has caused, allegedly, by man-made greenhouse gas emissions, by man-made carbon emissions, how do they explain the melting of the ice age? How do they explain that? There weren't people around. There weren't cars around. There weren't airplanes around. There weren't factories around. And yet the temperature changed so dramatically that it melted most of the ice that had frozen over the surface of the entire Earth. The point is, they can't. And they know it. And now we have the smoking gun evidence that these scientists have been lying, manipulating, and twisting the data. And now they are like a religion. It is like the Inquisition. when they are faced now with the fallacy and the lies of their dogmatic environmentalist beliefs, of their dogmatic socialism, what do? They want to burn you at the stake. Can you imagine? Galileo must be rolling in his grave. For centuries, science was the core of advancement in the Western world. Our economy, our medicine, our engineering, everything that has made us the most progressive, wealthy, technologically advanced civilization in the history of the world is based on objective science. Now these leftists are in the process of destroying that. They are now in the process of politicizing hard science. And what many in the scientific community don't understand, it's not just climate scientists that are now being discredited. It's not just global warming that's lost its credibility. If they're not careful, science itself, hard science, is going to lose its credibility. Because people are now saying, obviously, people are now seeing, where was the scientific community? Why were people afraid to speak out? Because now they're all coming out and everybody's saying, well, I always had doubts about global warming. Well, where were you 5 years ago? Where were you 10 years ago? This ClimateGate scandal, mark my words, is going to make Watergate seem trivial in comparison. It is not only going to bring down a president, it's going to bring down the entire liberal movement. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The number to call, 1-800-449-8255. The lines are blazing. Let's get to some of your calls. Bill in Gainesville, Florida, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, buddy. Hey, you know, the VA is a government-run healthcare system, and it is the epitome of an HMO on steroids, okay? If you don't like what the doctor says or does, you really don't have anywhere to go. You know, you're stuck with it. And they can do what they want and say what they want, and that's it. It's an extreme bureaucratic, and I got the people that run it and are in it are doing the best they can. But when they're overloaded the way they are and they want to impose this entire system on America, come on. Where are we going,
Bill,
with it?
Bill, you hit the nail right on the head. This is the Canadian healthcare system. This is the British national health system. This is what you see in countries all across Europe. What you have is subpar care, no choice, no options. When the government takes over healthcare, they don't just take over the hospitals. They don't just take over the insurance. They don't just take over the benefits. They take over your body. They take over your ability to take care of yourself and your family because it's now a monopoly. You have nowhere else to go. And so what they end up doing, there's no getting around it. Premiums go up, taxes go up, quality of care goes down, and inevitably, the only way they can keep costs down is through rationing. And this is, to me, what is most despicable about the silence of the media. Here you have the Democratic Party on a 58-42 vote just yesterday in the Senate coming out and saying yes to nearly $500 billion in cuts to Medicare. They are telling the seniors of this country, you're going to take it right on the chin. We are now going to ram this national health care bill, this government-run health care program, right through you and right on your back. That's exactly what they did. And everybody is now silent. Now suddenly the left wing, which before, if you made any attempts to restructure or reform Medicare, if you even talked about it, they would politically cut your throat. Now all of a sudden, oh, the Republicans are fear-mongering. Oh, the Republicans are defending a broken system. Chris Dodd, that shyster, was running around Capitol Hill yesterday saying, oh, John McCain and the Republicans are now trying to defend the indefensible. They are now defenders of the broken system. What broken system? Yes, it has flaws. Every system has flaws. But the American healthcare system is the best, most advanced, wealthiest, successful healthcare system in the history of the world. We have the finest drugs. We have the finest technology. We have the finest doctors and surgeons in hospitals. That's not by accident. That's not just because we live in the United States. That's because we have a substantial free market, free enterprise system that runs our healthcare. Once socialism takes over, once it becomes part of a big government bureaucracy, you lose everything. You lose innovation, you lose dynamism, you lose quality. Socialism does to healthcare what it does to every other aspect of life. It leads to stagnation and decline. And everybody knows it, except the liberal elites here in Washington. But pretty soon, Bill, mark my words, this one is their overreach. This one, they don't see it coming. But when Americans see their benefits getting cut back, when they see their taxes going through the roof, when they see their premiums going through the roof, they are going to hang this birds. Let's go to David in Montana. David, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Jeff. How are you? I was checking on some things, and is that Copenhagen thing December the 7th?
You're right. Yeah. It starts December 7th, and it ends, it's going to go almost to the 20th of December.
Okay. Pearl Harbor Day December the 7th?
You're completely right. And this is the environmental version of Pearl Harbor Day. This is now an assault and an attack on American sovereignty and on American capitalism. This is what the UN Climate Summit at Copenhagen represents. This is now the last stand of these green Marxist socialists, these watermelons, who are green on the outside but red on the inside. And what they are trying to do, David, make no mistake about this, what they are trying to do, this is not just some gab fest. This is not just world leaders coming down, as is many other environmental conferences before, where they say they're going to make reductions in carbon emissions and they're going to be more to be eco-friendly and environmentally friendly. This is not just a 13-day event where they're backslapping one another and eating shrimp and drinking champagne. This is a serious attempt to begin the process of imposing a world government upon the United States and upon the world. In the treaty itself, there is now explicit references to a quote-unquote international government with the power to tax, with the power to regulate. And what is to me most remarkable is in the face of this ClimateGate scandal, which is getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time, what did we hear today? On a Friday afternoon when nobody was paying attention, Obama says he's not coming in the early part of the conference as was scheduled. No, he's coming now on December 18th when all the world leaders will be there. Why? Because he says he has now got China and India to commit to now slowing the growth of their carbon emissions, and he is now going to commit the United States to a nearly 20% reduction in our greenhouse gas emissions, a massive cut. What that means in reality is that he is now backing the House bill that was passed in June. This is going to impose a $1 trillion price tag upon the American economy and upon the American people. For us to cut nearly 20% of our carbon emissions by 2020, do you know what we're going to have to do to this economy? We're going to have to start phasing out SUVs. We're going to have to start phasing out pickup trucks. We're going to have to make energy and electricity more expensive, double, triple what it is now to discourage use. They're going to come after you, David. They're going to come after me. They're going to come after everybody. This means massive carbon taxes. These people are insane. This is not even a sensible left. This is a lunatic left. And it is like a religion with these people. It is like they are ideological fanatics. Negotiating with Obama is like negotiating with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. It's the same thing, except on different ends of the spectrum. One is an Islamic fascist. The other one is a Marxist socialist. But in the end, they are both just as fanatical. You can point to them all the evidence, all the facts, all the logic you want. It doesn't matter. He just keeps going. But now he's going to realize When the American people find out what this guy is trying to commit the United States to, you are going to see a political war like you've never seen before. He comes back with that treaty, I am telling you. You think Americans are mad now? You think you've seen tea parties? You think you've seen all these town hall meetings over health care? It's going to be nothing compared to that treaty if he brings that home. It is going to be his political death knell. So I'm happy that he's going. Go, Barack. Go. Go to Copenhagen. Now, my advice to you is apparently all the, they call them sex workers in Denmark. Well, let's not get involved with the prostitutes because they're saying they're going to give it for free. Anybody who attends the summit is going to have access to free sex. This is what the sex workers in Denmark are claiming. This is now their big stand. Leave that aside. Leave the prostitutes aside. Barack, go and sign that treaty. I'm not asking you. I'm begging you. You want to be a radical socialist? You put your signature on that treaty and then you bring it home. Because, my friends, it is going to be a political feast for conservatives. This time, we are going to expose him without any doubt for the radical that he is. Go to Copenhagen, Barack, and sign that deal. Believe me, we conservatives will be back in power so quickly, it'll make your head spin. Let's go to Scott in Eugene, Oregon. Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for your good filling in, Jeff. Listen, you know, the climate crisis, as well as the blown way out of proportion financial crisis, are two means to the same goal. You know it as well as I do. They've been working this goal for 100 years now, and that goal is a one-world government run by international bankers, and that's what they're after. I don't even think they believe it, Jeff. You say it's a religion. What's a religion for these people is worldwide control and domination, and they're going to use the phony financial crisis and the phony climatic crisis that doesn't exist to attain that goal.
Scott, they trump up and manufacture crisis after crisis after crisis. If you stand back, if you remember last year, in the late summer, early fall of last year, when the presidential election campaign was heating up, McCain, in fact, was slightly ahead of Obama. He had started to pull ahead. All of a sudden, oh, we have the housing market crash. We have the financial bubble pop. Everything begins to pop. And all of a sudden, oh, the banking system is going to come to a crashing halt. The financial system is going to come to a crashing halt. It's going to be worse than the Great Depression. We won't be able to have access to money. The credit markets will completely freeze. It'll be the end of the world. It's the end of America as we know it. So just ram as much money through. Ram the legislation through. Don't even think about it. And there's that yo-yo George Bush signing off everything and giving the bankers of this country basically a blank check with the American taxpayers paying for it. They use that economic crisis to consolidate their control over the banking system and the financial system. And then these liberal elites then went after the auto sector. Oh, GM is too big to fail. Nobody's too big to fail. I'm not too big to fail. You're not too big to fail. No industry is too big to fail. It's okay. Many industries have gone down before. It's not the end of the world. We'd survive. We don't need General Motors. It would sadden me to see General Motors go. I drive a GM. I'm an American patriot. I like to see the auto industry do well. But it's GM's fault. There's no getting around that fact. They're the ones that are charging their unions. They have caved and capitulated to their unions decade after decade, year after year. Who gets paid $28 an hour to work on an assembly line? I never heard of that. My uncle used to be an engineer at GM. I went to a GM floor. These guys would sit around, literally, these workers, put a few screws in on to assemble a door. They're all in 5-minute segments, like on per car. It takes them 2 minutes to zip in all the screws. Da, 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 da. They're zipping it in, and they're sitting around talking, having coffee for 3 minutes. And these guys think that's worth $28 an hour with all of the health benefits, the dental benefits. I mean, it was outrageous. And so GM can't compete with the Japanese cars. They can't compete with the German cars. And now we're supposed to bail them out because of their inept management? No, I'm sorry. But they use crisis after crisis after crisis to increase government control. Now there's a global warming crisis. Despite all the evidence to the contrary. No. It's going to come to the end. The world is going to come to an end. It's Armageddon. It's the end of the world. unless we give them all this power. And now we have to give them even the authority to have an international regulatory regime, an embryonic world government. We're not that stupid. See, that's what they don't understand. That's their fatal flaw. It's their arrogance. They think they're so smart. They think they're so superior. But they don't understand. We're onto them. The American people are not as stupid as they think they are. In fact, the American people, from what I've seen living in Washington all these years, they're smarter than these liberal elites. They're worth more than all of them put together. They have more savvy, more experience, more know-how, more judgment, more patriotism, and more guts. Any one of you is worth more than 10 politicians on Capitol Hill. Take my word for it. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. The number to call, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Neil in San Diego. Neil, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
I'm getting back to Michael's dinner. I have a question I would love Michael to ask.
Sure.
I would like him to ask his candidate if he would have the courage to declare our dependency on foreign oil as a national security emergency and by executive order open up all of our natural resources, both land and sea, to development.
That's a very good question, Neil. I have to tell you, that would take a tremendous amount of courage for any candidate to come out and say it, for the simple reason, and I agree with you, we do need to wean ourselves off dependency on foreign oil. We do need to open up drilling, both not only in Alaska, not only on, but offshore drilling in the sea. Any kind of drilling, I am all for it. The problem is this. What the mainstream media refuses to tell you is that the Saudi lobby has become so powerful in Washington. Everybody talks about about AIPAC, about the supposed influence of the pro-Israel lobby. It pales in comparison to the power of the Saudi lobby. They have bought up members of the Senate. They've bought up members of the House of Representatives. They are buying up think tanks. They are buying people very close to the White House. And there is no way that any serious presidential candidate is going to come out and say, no, we don't want any more Mideast oil. We don't want any more Saudi oil. In fact, just look at Bill Clinton. The minute he leaves the presidency, what does he do? He becomes, in effect, a paid lobbyist for the Saudi government. He goes to Saudi Arabia. He goes to United Arab Emirates. He goes to all of these oil sheikdoms where they pay him $200, $250, $300,000 a speech. I mean, that's a lot of money to open your mouth for 45 minutes. And they have made him immensely rich. And what does he do? Through his Secretary of State, through his wife, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, they come out and they mouth the Saudi line on everything. The problem is not radical Islam in the Middle East. No, the problem is global warming. People don't understand. Many of these Arab dictators in the Middle East, they are the ones that are pushing the theory of global warming. They are one of the biggest people that push for global warming because they want to see a UN world government. They want to see American sovereignty be submerged. They don't want to see us in any way, shape, or form assert our national independence. Our national independence for them is death. And so they're the ones that are saying, oh, no, it's the Israeli-Palestinian issue. If you just resolve that, you won't have problems with Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden. That is a lie. That is an absolute lie. Osama bin Laden doesn't give a damn about the Palestinians. What he does care about is creating a world Muslim empire, and he wants the Jews to be eliminated along with Europe and the United States. But nobody has the guts to say that. And so this is why. You want to understand why Obama will not come up and denounce, he won't even call terrorism terrorism anymore. It's a man-caused disaster. You want to know why he's apologizing to the Muslim world. You want to know why Bush was never able to really take the fight to the radical Islamists everywhere. It's because we have been bought and paid for by Saudi Arabia. And this is the question I would have for this Republican contender. When are you going to stand up and defend the American nation? When are you going to say we are not for sale? We are not for sale to China. We are not for sale to Mexico. We are not for sale to Saudi Arabia. We are not for sale to all of these countries and international organizations that want to plunder, pillage, and take advantage of the United States. When is somebody going to say, I am an American first? I will defend our borders. I will defend our manufacturing base. I will defend our small businesses. I will defend our energy independence. When is somebody going to say to the Saudis and the Chinese and the Russians and the UN, take a hike? I'm an American first and foremost. Michael, I want to thank you so much, my friend, for the honor and privilege of sitting in for you. I can't tell you how much it means to me. Thank you. Once again, this is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.